Willkommen bei Renatos superdimensioneller Ecke. Heute Abend Makros Mythbusters mit Renato und Tom Bateman.
Viel Spaß. Und Gubaba.
Jawohl, mein Junge.
Welcome once again. Here we are. We're going to be talking about some interesting stuff that Tom Bateman has come up with. He's got a list in his hand on some lovely yellow paper, as you can hear. You can hear the yellowness. And he's going to ask some questions, and the speaker podcast team are going to try and answer to the best of our abilities.
We'll do our best.
Yes.
Gumbari mas.
Richard's got the Macros perfect memory.
I have perfect memory in front of me, so
he
my memory is perfect.
You spill that beer on it, it won't be perfect.
Well, it's already kind of frayed.
Shush.
It's kind of yellow.
It's not. It's not the best version I've seen.
Okay.
Though the best version would have been the 3-volume English translation that Books Nippon was going to do.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. They were going to do that.
And I was going to have all my questions answered, and it never happened. So I have had these questions.
What? Why did it never happen? Did you ever find out?
No, I don't know why it never happened. They actually.
This is the first I've heard of it.
No, because
it was a massive idea. They were going to literally translate the perfect memory word for word, and it was going to be great. It was going to be the greatest thing, and I remember as a fan.
When you bought Perfect Memory from Books Nippon, there was a little leaflet put inside saying, do you want an English translation?
Oh.
And they said, we're working on an English translation. We need translators. And, nothing ever came of it.
That would have been something.
Yeah. I'm doing my best. Slowly, but I'm doing it.
Okay. We're all very appreciative.
So, needless to say, I've got questions.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And we've got answers.
Good. All right. Well, first thing. Okay. Who came up with the idea of Macross?
All right. Richard.
What?
Okay.
It was your idea, right?
No, yeah, it was my idea. No,
about the painting on screen for 13 minutes?
Yes. No, I've got a better idea, because I got feedback from the last one.
Oh,
we'll get to that. Shoji Kawamori had the idea...
Hang on. We have to quantify this this question a bit more, because what do you mean, the idea? There's no one real idea in Macross, because is it a show about transforming robots, or is it a show where singing saves the galaxy, or is it a show about a love triangle? You know, so it's... What do you mean?
What was the idea that spawned the creation of the Macross television series?
Ulysses 31.
Ulysses 31, because Shoji Kawamori, if you look at the credits of Ulysses 31, you see that at the end, Studio Nui is credited. In actual fact, Shoji Kawamori was the only one of Studio Nui who actually worked on that show. And he had, a to and fro with the main production in France. And they wanted some things, and he was trying to provide them, but he was doing it in his own style, you know. He loves to do things in his way, and they weren't liking it. So he had all the ideas about, well, let's make a city in space. You have the what's the name of the ship in the Ulysses?
Oh, I don't remember.
Well, anyway.
It wasn't called the Ulysses?
No, the Ulysses was the guy. Yeah. Right. Was the main character. So inside
whatever the ship that
inside
Odysseus.
The ship right. was designed by Kawamori, but right. his original design was a city, a domed city like the album covers of Boston, who are coming to.
You mean Tom Scholz and whoever
and his backup band?
Yes.
Yeah. So that was it, and he described in detail in this book that came out after Do You Remember Love. Mm-hmm. There's a really long interview with him where he said that, you know, he even thought up that, you know, they should have a train system because you've got a city, you're going to be able to transport yourself from one place to another. And so in that dome, there would be a tube-type train system.
Ended up in My Fair Minmay.
Did it?
Yeah.
I know it ended up in Macross 7.
Yeah, no, but it ended up in My Fair Minmay, too. They said that the pipes... The giant pipes became the train system.
Okay.
For the Macross.
Okay.
So these ideas.
So these ideas,
leftover ideas that he had pitched for Ulysses
3. Yeah, lot of it was put into this new plan. Then again, the original story for Macross was not anything like what it turned out to be. The original idea was, they had like at least two different plans. One of them was called Genocidus, and Genocidus was about a bunch of people going to different planets, but like getting into sorts of. It was going to be really hardcore science fiction, and they were not going to have with Gorowalks. They were not going to have humanoid type robots.
Needless to say,
it was like Power Armors and Gorowalks were the mecca for that,
and schoolgirls. Yeah. It literally, schoolgirls in uniform.
Yes,
uniform. That did not go over very well with the potential sponsors who would be making toys. Why? Because no one wants to buy Gorowalk toys only. Mm-hmm. They want to buy robot toys. They know that robot toys sell. So they said, went back to the drawing board. Well, what are we going to do? We really want to make this hardcore science fiction story, but we can't seem to manage to do it. So what are we going to do? And then they just say, okay, you know what? Usually, because you guys... This is Miyatake speaking to Kawamori. Miyatake is his kind of senpai in Studio Nue. He's a bit older than he is. And Kawamori used to go to Studio Nue just to sniff around.
This is when Kawamori was like 20. I mean, he hadn't even
Before that.
Okay, so he hadn't even dropped out of college yet.
He hadn't even started going to college yet.
Wow, okay.
He was in high school when he started going to Studio Nue.
Okay.
And he wasn't given a job immediately, but eventually, since he came so often, Miyatake just said, okay, why don't you just draw some stuff here? I mean, and he started doing it, and then he got employed.
So when did Studio Nue start?
Studio Nue started in the 70s.
It's been for a long time.
Yeah.
They did illustrations for science fiction novels. They designed the power armor.
Yeah, the big thing was the power armor for the Starship Troopers, the Japanese translation of Starship Troopers. They did the power armor design.
The book. This was before that.
The book. Oh, of course.
This was way before the anime. This was in the
70s. And the anime design was based on their design.
Was the power armor design in Daikon 3. Was based on the Starship Troopers design. So that's the really iconic one that Studio Nue did in the... It was probably, 74, 75? They worked on Yamato also.
Yes, they did.
So that was...
Well, that's why. See, we were talking about this earlier. Yamato, they were all Yamato fans. So they went... Kawamori and Mikimoto and all these people, they went... to try and find out where the place that they make Yamato is, because Yamato is so amazing.
Because Tim Eldred said, like, the reason that the Yamato staff went with Studio Nue was because they would ask Studio Nue, okay, can you draw a picture of the spaceship? And then they would come back with, like, 7 or 8 different sketches. Studio Nue was just crazy. For this stuff.
Yeah,
so
they worked on lots of really, really hardcore, realistic, like, intricate mechanic designs. Like, they, you know, Raiden and all that stuff, all the super robot shows, they didn't design them, but they did a lot of illustrations where they showed cutaways and the internal mechanisms of the robot. So that was all them.
So that's
they were getting a lot of commission work, but this was the first time that they were actually going to pitch their own animated and own their own creative property.
Which created a lot of buzz, because a lot of the fans were like, oh my god, Studio Nue is like actually doing their own anime.
Yeah, so whatever,
this is really gonna be
whatever they were going to come up with, even if it was total garbage, people were going to start to watch it. They were paying attention. However... Miyatake said, okay, nothing is getting through. We need sponsors to fund our show. Maybe we should just do something very simple and build on the success of that to do what we really want first. And Kamura said, okay, what do you want to do? And so they formed this kind of like dummy project. It wasn't really what they wanted to do, but they needed to get an okay first before they could move into anything. And that was the Battle City Mega Road. The Battle Seat of Megarode was really the foundation of what Macross eventually became. But it was still like a light-hearted comedy kind of thing. The captain was a pervert.
Well,
something.
That's because Wiz Corporation came in, right?
Yeah, and then they left.
Yeah, but they came in and they were like, okay, we want to do a parody.
Yeah.
And Studio Neue, from my understanding, was really uncomfortable about using their pretty serious designs in what was essentially a big joke.
Yeah, but at this point, they'd already said okay to, like, humanoid robots.
Right.
So they were very lenient at this point. It wasn't like they were so protective of their property.
And it,
like,
doesn't ultimately matter, like, because Wiz Corporation went out of business and kind of pulled out, like, they vanished from the thing before it went very far. But some of the parody aspects did remain.
Yes, unfortunately, Breast Fighter did not.
Yes. Ah. However, one of Wiz Corporation's idea was to have a female alien spy go aboard the Megarode and seduce the captain. This ended up being kind of the Max and Miria story.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff, like, if you look at the original ideas, it ended up in the show, but
in a
different way or in a really truncated way.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the ideas that they had was for the Macross itself, the Megarode, was that in cruiser mode, it could use its engines but not use the main gun.
Because it was the same energy source or something like that.
Right, whereas in, like, Storm Attacker mode, it could use the main gun but not use the engines.
Yeah.
And that only survives in one little bit of dialogue where Exidor says, well, he looks at the Storm Attacker mode and says, well, in this form, their engines must be compromised.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, well, you know? Yeah, but it's not that vital to...
No.
Yeah, so that's basically what it was. But then, like, if you talk about, okay, what about the laugh triangle? What about the singing aspect of it? That, like, they were in production.
Yeah.
When all that came up.
Mm.
And it's funny to think of that now, because now when we think of Macross, even Japanese people who don't know, is that the show where, like, singing ends wars?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the most lasting impression that people have of the show these days. Because there were a lot of robot shows.
Yeah,
because
the idea initially was that Miki Moto was kept on drawing this one Chinese girl.
Yeah,
and the staff kind of really liked her, and they were like, well, let's put her in the show. And the idea initially was that she would just be
a
Chinese, like a waitress, delivering egg rolls up to the bridge crew. And,
Like a comedy relief kind of character.
Yeah,
but she turned
wasn't
out to be
really,
the star, right?
She wasn't really very important. Yeah. But the thing is,
and you notice he's not in the opening at all.
Right.
Oh.
Of the show.
Yeah, she's not. But the thing is, Miki Moto was also a member of the Seiko Matsuda fan club.
Right.
Seiko Matsuda is the eternal idol. She starred in 1980. She's a really big idol singer. One of the first really big idol singers. And somehow this Chinese girl got conflated with Seiko Matsuda.
Yeah.
And they decided, well, okay, maybe the Chinese girl, instead of just delivering egg rolls to the bridge, maybe she should be a singer.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then that
took
snowballed.
Over the main, the main aspect of the... So in answer to your question, who had the main... It was really a collaborative effort. Mm. And the idea itself changed shape so many times that it's not so easy to simplify.
Right.
But I hope that...
What did Ishiguro bring to it?
Ishiguro mainly oversaw production.
Right.
making sure that everything was going smoothly. And he was responsible for everything.
He didn't do a very good job in some ways.
Well, no, but I remember he had arguments with people regarding the way that the characters would act.
Oh, okay.
There was a... I think this was in the commentary, maybe. He said that episode 4, where...
He wrote.
Hikaru and Minmay are trapped.
Yeah.
And his idea was that at first it would be fun, but then they would get scared, and then they would get, like, almost suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the way that it turned out. But Kawamori and all those people said, no, it has to be fun all the way through. It's fun. It's an adventure, you know, like camping.
Okay.
And he was like, no, if you're a kid, this is frightening. After a while, you realize you might not get out. And they're like, no, it's you're taking away the dream, man, the dream. And you'll notice, I don't know, but you'll know, from what I can tell, you'll notice that in the movie,
mm-hmm.
it is fun. There is no suicidal aspect.
No,
there's
never.
No, like, well, we're never going to get out of here. It's more about what's happening to Earth. Do you know? Well, it doesn't matter. Let's just enjoy it. Let's have a shower, you know.
Yeah, how do you kiss on TV?
right. So are you going out with that co-star of yours?
Right.
So, you know, obviously...
Scuba-da!
Whatever Ishiguro had in involvement that he had in the TV show, which I think he had quite a bit, but just kind of like steering people in the right direction, it was quite mitigated by the movie, where he really just made sure that everything was running fairly smoothly.
Okay.
And people were doing their jobs and things like that. He wasn't that involved in the story for them.
So you would say that Do You Remember Love is like much Kawamori's, more Kawamori's
Yeah, very
movie.
Much so, very much, yeah.
Okay.
To the extent that he hardly credits Ishiguro anymore. So.
Well, he's taking the credit for everything now.
Exactly, yeah. Right. It's a problem. All right, here we go.
So where do we go?
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, actually it did. Okay. Actually it did. It kind of, you know, as it that it was, you know, a combination of a number of things, but I could see where, like, you know, where the seed came from.
Yeah.
And where it came. But how do we get from Battle City Mega Road to the name Super Dimension Fortress Macross? were they really going to call it Macbeth?
Yes.
And it was going to be Super Dreadnought Fortress.
Yeah,
and some of the initial merchandise still said Super Dreadnought Fortress Macross.
Mm.
But yeah, the way I heard it is that yes, like one of the sponsors was a really big Shakespeare fan, and he didn't like the name Megarod, and he said, "Well, we should call it Macbeth." And
was that Onishi?
I don't know. I don't know who it was.
I think I heard it was him.
Really? Okay. Because I've never heard a name connected to that. It was just one of the sponsors.
Yeah, okay.
But they said, well, we don't really want to go with Macbeth. I mean, and a lot of this is on the commentary in the Animego.
Yeah.
In the last two episodes, there's the secret track, which is an interview with Ishiguro. And he was like, well, Macbeth, you know, could we really call a robot show Macbeth? But again, Macbeth and Macross in Japanese, it's just
one character.
It's one character off.
Makurosu and Makubesu. Yeah.
So they said, well, you know, we could change it to Macross. And that turned out to be okay.
Macro.
Because you got Macro, the Macro, yeah.
Like the Mega.
And they worked that into the title, the opening theme, right?
Macro no solo! Solo.
Yeah. Tsuranu
ite. Yeah.
How do you say Battle City Mega Road in Japanese?
What is Battle City? Like,
no, but the title was Battle City.
Battle City. So,
oh,
right.
They didn't...
there was no...
There was no kanji.
Ah.
No.
Yep.
I think.
Right there, it was all in katakana.
Yeah.
Mm.
Ah. So it was all English. But we don't know if it was Mega Road or Mega Load.
Yeah.
No clarification on that? From
Well,
they never
again,
organized it.
Well,
What I read in Robotech Art 1 was that it was a pun. That it was the Mega Road that they're taking from point A to point B.
That seems very...
And then the mega load of all of these civilians on board the ship.
There's so much retconning going on.
Yeah, but that's Ardeth Carlton and Kay Reynolds. I trust their research.
All right, how did the team... We have the story of you know, how Kawamori got to Studio NA, bugged Miyataki until he got a job.
Right.
I don't know.
It's working for me.
But how did you know he meet Mikimoto? Was this like the way like John Lennon and Paul McCartney met?
There were
at school?
three friends in Keio University. Kawamori, Mikimoto, and the legendary Hiroshi Onogi. They were all friends in university. So of course Kawamori was became one of the mecha designers for Macross. Mikimoto became the character designer. Onogi was brought in a bit later as one of the script writers.
Yeah, but they all met. They all did produce. They all kind of worked together.
Yeah,
and prior to that, because they did. Because
they did the
Uchuu no Senshi.
Yeah,
Saishu Senshi. The ultimate warrior,
which is in Perfect Memory. Some of the art, it looks pretty rough. Where is it?
Very
70s. Roots of Macross.
There it is.
Oh my god.
Saishu Senshi.
What is Saishu Senshi.
Saishu Senshi.
Final Soldier.
Yeah. Final Soldier.
So this was the kind of like...
This is
it was
the
kind
actual...
It was kind of a doujinshi that they did, right?
Yeah. Just this one page right here?
No, they did... It was like a doujinshi, so it was comic.
This is a page of it.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Ah. So it's like a manga.
So they worked on that. Of course, they were also incredibly huge Gundam fans.
Who wasn't?
Well Adrian.
And yeah.
It's not a perfect show.
No, there's Macross.
So they're Gundam fans. And obviously they do what Gundam fans do. Talented Gundam fans do. And they created Doujinshi.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Gunsight.
Yes.
Yes. Gunsight 1.
And just one?
Well, I think there was only one, wasn't there?
I don't know. I've only seen one.
You've actually seen it?
Yeah, because I was telling a story earlier. I thought I was talking to you. Well, anyway, so Ishiguro died a few years ago, right? A couple of years ago. And he left a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay.
And they've asked me, okay, well, do you know anyone who might want this? And I'm like,
I'll take Gunsight 1, thanks.
I don't know. So I'm trying to arrange right now for all that stuff to go to the Meiji Subculture Museum.
Okay.
So we'll have an exhibition. I've talked to people and they seem to think it's a good idea, but talks aren't.
I'll take the Gunsight 1. I'll loan it to the Meiji Library.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna.
Is the Gunsight 1 part of that?
Yes. That's why I was getting to. Yeah, they've got a bunch. I took photographs, but I don't have them here. They've got like scripts of Orgas. They got all this stuff.
Wow!
Yeah, it's really insane. Mm-hmm.
So they created a Gundam fanzine called Gunsight, which ended up in Macross as the call sign for the Macross itself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and Itano worked on Gundam.
He worked on them, yeah.
As well.
As an animator, yeah.
Yeah.
How many episodes was it going to be? Because I hear 52, it was then it was 27,
then it went to 36. Everything you hear is correct.
It is.
Everything you hear is correct.
It changed so many times.
It's changed so many times.
Okay, so what is definitively, how many episodes did it start out to be?
It started out to be 52.
Okay.
It just kept getting shortened.
Well, the reason for that is every show starts out as 52 because that's the original plan. That's the original proposal, right?
A year.
Yeah.
One episode for a year.
However, the problem that you hear is that a lot of people on certain websites will be saying, well, yeah, and then the post-war arc was like
added
big,
onto it.
No, it was a big part of it, but that was never part of it initially.
They went into production, and it still wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the 52 episode synopsis, which I'm looking at right now, which is really truncated. There is no post-war arc. The episode 52 is the final battle. Mm-hmm. The 48... Then later they made the 48 episode synopsis. Again, episode 48, final episode is the final battle. Then they really go into detail for the 39 episode synopsis. And again... 39 is the final battle. There is an epilogue added.
Spoilers.
Spoilers for a show that was never produced.
Yes.
Episode 39, there's the final battle. And then it jumps ahead 15 years later.
Yeah.
Hikaru has died in a test pilot accident.
Wah-wah.
And Misa and the children... Of course, Misa is not Misa at this point. She is Aki, but she goes off in the SDF2 Mega Road to seed the universe. Max apparently dies too.
Max dies.
Max dies. Yeah. If you look at the 52 episodes,
the genius fool.
Yes.
What I got right.
Episode 48. No, I'm sorry. Sorry, episode 48 is The Genius Gets Married. Episode 50 is The Genius Falls.
Nice.
Episode 46 of the 48 episode synopsis is The Genius Falls. The 39 episode one, I don't think he dies because he's mentioned in episode 38. Yeah, no, they get married in 38.
Well, falls doesn't necessarily mean die.
No.
Maybe he just fell.
It just means they got divorced early.
Yes.
The genius trips.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk about, like, all of the concepts that were supposed to be for the end of the original Macross ending up in Macross 7.
I've never put that together.
I don't really see that either. Yeah. It's, the whole idea, I think where that comes from is that the final episode, again, was supposed to have an epilogue where the Mega Roads are going out and seeding the galaxy.
Okay, all right, but let's get back to the main topic, which is there's something happened after that as well, because they truncated it to 26.
Yes.
And then they were getting pretty good ratings, and so they said, well, and you know, they're selling a lot of toys, and so they said, you know, why don't you make more? And they're like, so we just truncated everything.
Yes,
and
they
now
truncated
it
to 26 episodes.
Yeah.
Bastards.
And I have never heard of this happening with any other show getting extended.
No.
Now, I was...
Yeah.
Talking with some Robotech fans.
Oh, God.
Who were saying,
The fans.
Yeah, saying, like, well, then what about Dragon Ball or something, where that got extended forever? And it's like, no, that's different. That's a Jump comic. It's a completely different business model than what you get with, like, a mecha show like this. Anime based on manga will pretty much run... as long as the manga runs, as long as it's profitable. An anime that is made as an anime will have a set amount of episodes, and that's all they will do. I can't think of any other show that got extended, except maybe Dogrum.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dogrum ended up being, what, 75?
They
something
went over
like
a year.
That. But to have... a show like this where they're like, wow, the ratings are pretty good, let's extend it. I don't think I've ever heard of that ever happening.
It threw everything into chaos.
Because
they were like, okay, what are we going to do? We've told our story. We made the ending.
Admittedly, it gave them a chance to catch their breath a bit by throwing in another clip show in the form of Phantasm. Which... brought it to 27 episodes instead of 26 episodes. What are you going to do for the next 9? So that's when they asked Hiroshi Onogi to come legendary on board, Hiroshi Onogi.
And by this point, a lot of the staff, the animators themselves, had actually left the show.
Okay.
Because they were, well, no, but they were still working on Macross, but they were starting to put together the movie.
Right.
You know, the movie was already
this point. So Inogi was the one who worked out, like, the whole post-war arc.
Yeah.
And what would happen there.
Mm. You'll notice there's hardly any Mikimoto and...
No, it's all Shimada. It's all Shimada.
Yeah.
I mean, you can kind of tell.
There's 9 episodes, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not all Shimada, there's Hirano as well.
There's Shimada, there's Hirano, and there's a lot of Star Pro.
Yeah.
All right, so now you talk about people in Shimada, and then Mikimoto has moved on. I know a number of people have moved on to the movie, but I want to get to the movie in a little bit. Who are the people who worked on it? Not so much the people, but the studios. You talked about Studio
Star Pro.
Star Pro and Artland, now an anime friend.
Yes.
Now, this is one of the big misconceptions.
Right.
This is where the Mythbuster really...
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so
and this is the one that Renato has been going on about for years.
Right, decades. So now bust this myth.
Okay.
Okay, who is who? As far as who's Studio New?
Studio Nue did the design.
Wait.
Let's
make this straight. Studio Nue is not and has never been an animation studio. They do not produce animation there.
They design stuff.
Where the production of animation is defined as a place where people draw and then they film it, they photograph it, and they put it together, they paint the background. All that production is not done at Studio Nue. Studio Nue is a design agency. Like we said, it's just a handful of people, really.
Yeah.
And it's a
especially now.
It's 3 people now.
Yes.
And it's a small apartment in Nerima Ward here, residential area. It's not this big, big studio thing.
Is Miyatake still one of the 3?
No.
Isn't he?
Is he?
Let's go find out.
I thought he was retired.
Didn't he sign his stuff? Well, retired. Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
He signs Studio Nue.
Again, Miyatake doesn't even have a cell phone.
Well, Miyatake had a design role in Yamato 2199.
Really?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And in Frontier as well.
Yeah.
He did the SDF-4.
The Gengaten, he had a lot of...
SDF-N-4.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Miyatake is that what he's actually best at drawing is not mecha. He's best at drawing, like, plants and organic stuff.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And so
he designed all the like, dino birds from Macross Plus and stuff like that.
Right.
And in, for example, not to get too off-topic, in Yamato 2199, a lot of the stuff for the Gamalus planets and the fungus and all that thing, they gave to him because they said that he turns that stuff around just really quickly, and it's always good. But,
That's why the Badolza Fortress is so insane-looking.
Mm.
Yeah, that's all
you mean why it looks like a cabbage?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, the Zentradi ships, according to Itano, look like pieces of shit.
Oh, okay.
So, there you go.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure Miyatake appreciated that.
Yes.
Right. So, Studio Nue did the designs.
So they never have ever animated an episode of...
No.
Studio does not do animation.
Yeah.
Full stop.
And that would be... Who did do the animation for...
Tatsunoko.
What about Artland?
Artland as well. Was the main kind of like, in this case, subcontractor they would be.
Yeah.
Artland helped. It's like, credit is Kyoroku.
Mm-hmm.
And so they cooperated on it. And then they had to farm out some episodes to Korea. So that was Star
done
Pro.
Through Anime Friend.
Anime Friend was
to Star Pro.
Anime Friend was run. Oh my god! Was it Iwata Hiroshi? Maybe
no. That was Ipekure. Was no. That's
Ipekure.
Tatsunoko.
So Tatsunoko, and then Artland, and then Anime Friend comes in, or is Anime?
Yeah. Well,
Friend...
the 3 of them were the original production houses.
Anime Friend is not Tatsunoko.
Anime Friend is not Satsuno.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So, good. Okay, that clears up.
But Anime Friend had a relationship or owned. No, I don't know. they sent a lot of their workload to Korea.
Ah.
And Studio Pro, what is it?
Star Pro.
Is based in Korea, and you'll see the episodes that they did. The way the credits are written, usually it says the keyframes were done by these guys, the in-betweening was done by these guys, and they would have people's names. But for the Star Pro episodes, they don't. It just says Star Pro.
Right.
And if you look on, maybe on Perfect Memory, maybe on some of these other books that have all the credits listed, like Macross Chronicle, they sometimes mention one name, and it's a Korean name, and that's probably, I don't know, the owner of Studio Star Pro or something like that.
Yes, but if you look at all of the bad episodes,
yes,
those are the only ones that list Star Pro.
Right, right. Is that listed on the end credits of the show?
Yes.
Yeah, literally. So if you look on the end credits, you're going to see Star Pro on the bad episodes.
So this is why it annoys me so much.
Well, because they always say Anime Friend. They're always saying Anime Friend. I know.
Anime Fiend.
Or that it was Tatsunoko or whatever that did the bad episodes.
Well, no, it was Star Pro.
Star Pro is to blame.
Yeah. I mean, Mospita was all done by Anime Friend. Yeah. And that's not great animation, but it's not level of...
it was consistent.
It was consistent, and it wasn't as bad as Virgin Road.
Here's a question. What was the reaction to when they got the Star Pro stuff?
Well, I don't know about that, but I know about the reaction to Episode 11...
Which was the first contact.
Okay. But the thing is, there's the broadcast version, and then they went back and fixed it.
Yeah.
So if you get like the DVD,
but that wasn't Star Pro.
No, it wasn't. If you get the DVD or the Blu-ray of SDF Macross, they will have both on there. And if you watch the broadcast version of Episode 11. It is almost like watching a slideshow.
Yeah.
You remember the bit where Britai's pipe falls down and almost hits Misa. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like, frame.
Yeah. So they didn't have time to do the in-betweens. They just had the keyframes.
Yeah. The entire episode is like that.
Yeah.
And the show almost got canceled.
Because of that. Because they were like, we don't have this episode finished in time for the air date. What are we going to do? And so for a while they were thinking, well, let's just make a clip show, put a rerun on or something like that. Uh-huh. And they said, no, if you put another rerun on, because they'd had several reruns by this point. If you put another rerun, you're cancelled. That's it.
Wow.
The show is over. So they were like, okay, we've got to really... get our act together, and they just put together this kind of slideshow kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's really bad. And that
episode, as it was broadcast, still exists on the Macross books.
It exists on an extra on the DVD and Blu-ray. They went back and fixed it up, which, if you saw Robotech, you saw the fixed version.
You saw the fixed.
They did that for like syndication.
Yeah. But the first Star Pro episode was actually episode three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
which has, such wonderful scenes as Fokker's VF-1S with a VF-1A head.
Yeah, and you know why?
In fire mode.
Because they were pretty much drawing what they could make out from Ishiguro's really rushed storyboards.
The VF-1D cockpit suddenly turning into a gun pod and then turning back. That just shows
they don't care.
Them landing on the front part of the SDF.
Yeah. Well, it's not as bad as the nose lasers later.
Yeah, especially that.
Lasers.
Then landing on the front part of the SDF, that was especially... I went back to see the original storyboards for that scene, and... if you look at it, It's very difficult to tell unless you've studied the line art very clearly that that's supposed to be the back or that it's supposed to turn or something like that.
Well, so, I thought that made sense because they hadn't added the Daedalus and the Prometheus yet.
No, so they should go into the hole that connect of the arm that connects to the Daedalus and Prometheus. But they didn't. Okay. They went into the bow of the fit.
Yeah, the bow. Yeah.
The bow, the bow. The
bow.
Yeah, so that's in the storyboard, but it's so rough that you can see how they would make a mistake. Then again, it is their job to make sure that everything is on model, and maybe they didn't have the model design sheets or something in front of them.
The first two episodes look incredibly good, and the third episode just looks crap.
They just did not care is my conclusion.
Well, again, when we get to Virgin Road, we understand the horror to which they didn't care.
Yeah.
Every third episode is like, yeah.
Right.
There it is. Oh, no, I don't think Virgin Roads... I don't think it's as bad as... Interrupting called Battle Cry. Was it a Kung Fu Dandy? That's god-awful.
Oh, okay.
Kung Fu Dandy... Star Pro?
I think it was.
You're talking about the fight, right?
Yeah.
That was where Kaifun... Comes
and kicks ass.
Yeah. That's dreadful.
Well, we got perfect memory right here.
That's who Star Pro is. And they're responsible. It's not
really worse than this?
No. That's pretty bad, but I thought the bit
where Miria appears in the dress and she says, she's so beautiful. No, she's not.
That is pretty bad. We're looking at the Kung Fu Dandy page in Perfect Memory, and... Oh, well, that's the one where Hikaru ends up getting shot down. That wasn't so bad.
This part right here.
Oh,
Where they're eating in the restaurant. That's
when they're eating in the restaurant, and the report comes through that the Macross has to leave Earth.
So that is pretty bad. So did they finally kick Star Pro off the team?
No, they stuck around for the last
nine episodes?
Yeah.
Well, okay, this
the
is
last
a story.
Nine episodes.
This is a story. After the episode 11 fiasco, this is when the staff decided, okay, we need to do something really good. Mm-hmm. Just as kind of a... We're sorry kind of thing to the fans.
Yeah.
And, of course, this ended up being episode 27, the big battle where Earth gets destroyed. Mm-hmm. And basically the climax to the whole thing.
And even that, you know, that barely made it.
Yeah.
It's air date. They didn't have time to color all the cells. Mm-hmm. So they said, we can't afford to have shading, so let's just color everything in flat color, like the Macross and the Valkyries and stuff. And then Kawamori said, no, it has to be really detailed. Put the shading. And I said, we don't have time. We can't do it. And so he went back and used a black marker and put a lot of shading on it using black. So
and
that's why
that
those things look so different.
Entire week, the week before it aired...
Kawamori got 3 hours of sleep.
Kawamori got 3 hours of sleep. Not 3 hours of sleep a night.
Three hours of sleep
for the entire week.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's really the huge gap between Star Pro, who doesn't give a damn, and Kawamori, who would sacrifice his own health to...
He still prides himself on being able to stay up for 72 hours, at least.
And Itano literally did sacrifice his health and was hospitalized.
Yeah.
Because he got, a stomach ulcer or something? It was pretty bad.
Oh, and this wasn't the crashing his motorcycle?
No, that was something else. No. He was in hospital and because of from overwork.
Mm.
And he said he had a race, a motorcycle race or something. Yeah. And so could he get out of hospital just for that? And I think he ran away.
Well, he almost died during Macross Plus, where he blacked out and then the plane landed. This is when they went to Edwards Air Force Base to check out what flying in a real plane was like. Mm-hmm. And Itano was in the back seat of one of the planes and he blacked out. And then when they landed, when you black out in a fighter plane, it's kind of easy to die, even after you've landed. And so the Big West guy, like, handed me a piece of paper and was like, here, draw what it looks like.
right now.
And it's like, he could have, like, just dropped dead right there.
Where is that story from? Because I've heard that story before, but I don't remember where now.
See, I've heard the first part of that given by Kawamori.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard the quick sketch now.
The thing about the, you know, him blacking out is true, because it's actually an extra on the Macross Plus Blu-ray. You see their home movie where they go to Edward Zerber's.
They still enjoy the flight.
Probably.
Well,
now did Kawamori fly?
Or yes. Both. No, both of them did.
Both of them. In separate
and
planes.
As we said before, or as Renato said before, the voice actor for Isamu was like, "Well, I love planes. Maybe they'll send me to Edwards Air Force Base." And no, they just put him on a roller coaster.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Right. Pretend you're flying.
Right.
So moving ahead with that, how does Do You Remember Love happen? And because you say that they now the animators are moving on to
the movie.
So the B team was working on the TV series while the A team was going on to
plan the movie, pre-production.
Right.
Okay. So how does the movie? When does that idea come about? To the now we're going to make the jump to doing a movie.
Well, who originally had the idea? I don't remember, but I think, you know, as much as you said that the episode 27 was kind of like a thank you for sticking with us and I'm sorry for episode 11, right. I think they also wanted to make sure that this was not what you remember Macross for, and we're going to make a really super high quality anime, and it's going to be one story, and we're going to tell the story the way that it
should. Well, how many clip show movies of anime TV series had been made by this point? I mean, there was the Gundam trilogy. Yeah.
Yamato.
but all of them used footage from the TV show, and I think Macross was one of the first ones that didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, when had there ever been like a reimagination done? Had it ever been done?
Yeah.
You know, it was a remake.
I can't think of one.
Uh-huh. And that's what it's so different from something that like it wasn't a compilation.
And it's different from like you know, a remake, you know, these days you see a remake after 10 years or something, but like this was the following year, you know, the series ended in 83 and in 84 we're gonna make a movie. The same story, but it's it's new animation. That was not done. That was not a regular thing.
Was there a lot of the idea of, okay, now that we did the show, let's do the movie, but now we can do it better? Or like, that they hit on ideas, like, look at the way the Zentradi look from the TV show to the movie. They look incredibly different.
Yeah.
Much more alien.
Yeah.
And, you know, going with the Zentron-Meltron war, which... Yeah. You know,
well, I think a lot of that,
departure from the teacher.
But I think a lot of that is to adjust for the completely different format that a 2-hour movie desires, because you need to be able to look. There's three factions, right? Humans, Zentradi, and Meltron. You need to be able to see them and in 1 second know what faction that ship belongs to. Or so they had to make everything radically different and yet recognizable in its own unique way. So again, that's all Miyatake. He wasn't just credited as mecha designer, he was production designer.
This is also, by the way, one of the main reasons why I call shenanigans on Big West's official stance that Do You Remember Love is a movie within the Macross timeline. And everyone says, well, it's like World War II.
It's not the Big West official saying, that's Kawamori.
No, Kawamori says nothing is canon.
But he supervises all the Chronicles stuff.
Yeah, but he says, well, if you did it like this, it would be like this. If you did it like this, it would be like this. But Big West is like, no, the TV series is real. And Do You Remember Love is a 2031 movie.
That is another reason that I do not like Macross 7.
Okay, but because let me finish. Okay, if it's like World War II, Okay, in Macross TV, you've got humans, Zentradi, Supervision Army.
Yeah.
In Do You Remember Love, you have humans, Zentradi, Meltrondi. I don't see any World War II movie having...
replacing the Nazis with some other...
exactly. It's like, well, okay, so you've got the Allied, you've got the Nazis,
all right.
And then who defeats the Nazis? No, not the Soviet Union. Let's make it Iceland.
Okay, I think we're getting off the main thing, why did Do You Remember Love turn out the way it did? So why did they replace the Supervision Army with the Meltrondi?
Because it makes it easier to understand.
Exactly. Yeah. So, again, it's to make it fit into this two-hour thing mm-hmm. without seeming too truncated.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah?
Just to make it all clear. Everything is in primary colors. Well, not really, but, like, you know what I mean, right?
Green, purple.
Yeah. Very easy to tell apart. The same with the relationships, the character mm-hmm. relationships.
Right.
You know, you have to have Minmay be a star already and then meet because, you know, you don't have time.
Jump right into the story.
Yeah, and I think it works.
I think so too. Yeah.
Nothing is really compromised that much. I would say maybe, you know, Max and Miria blink and you miss them at the end.
Right.
You know, you want to know what happened with that.
You don't really understand why you should care about Kakizaki, but you don't really understand why you should care about Kakizaki when you watch the show either.
Hey, do you want to talk about the wedding scene very quickly?
What about it?
That it existed?
Yeah, it existed. Yes, there was a Max and Miria wedding scene.
Scene.
Yes.
Max and Dress.
In the... Max and Dress. In the movie, you remember that Bodolza is fighting Laplamis. The wedding itself was a staged event. Well, I guess they did get married, but like it was supposed to be
more culture shock.
A trick.
Right.
Yeah. They were saying, look, we found love, so we don't need to fight each other anymore. Right. So, Zentradi, lay down your weapons. We Meltrondi, come in peace. And as soon as they lay down their weapons, they would blow them all to Kingdom Come.
Right.
So, it's interesting that, you know, in the final movie, Bodolza is the evil one. But actually, both Bodolza and Laplamis were equally treacherous
in
the original thing. And also, it turns out that, you know, by association, Max is kind of a bad guy at the end.
Huh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But that whole thing got cut out. Is that what you're... Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the scene. That's what this is describing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom has pulled up.
Yeah.
This is from the Macross.
Oh hey.
What do you call that book?
Continuity.
Yeah.
Wow, you've got a lot
story,
of stuff.
The Macross. Do You Remember Love storyboard book?
Tom's
that came
showing
out in
us
the
80s. Space helicopter right
now. The Robotech Vision stuff.
The Macross Do You Remember Love storyboard book that came out in the 80s. It is not, contrary to what it says on the title, the full storyboard. It's just they pick up some panels from the storyboard and explain it in prose. So it's, you know, I would have preferred the actual real storyboard. By the way, when they reissued the actual storyboard in the special edition HD DVD thing, it does not have this page.
Really?
Yeah.
Shame.
Right, there's a lot of stuff that they took out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you were talking to Mikimoto.
Was I?
Yeah, and you thought that he had done, like, all of the character art for Do You Remember Love, but it turned out that he didn't.
Oh, not the character art, but, like, the keyframes and stuff.
Right, yeah.
He did Shusei, which is, like, correcting and, you know, touching up. But he didn't draw that many of them. And it's the same way that Itano didn't actually do that many action scenes, even the ones that look like Itano.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are there any other deleted scenes out of Do You Remember Love?
Well, there's the ending, but that got put back in.
Flashback 2012.
Right. But I prefer the original version where it just, like, as soon as the countdown ends, it goes to black.
Credits.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the stuff from Flashback 2012 that was added onto the special edition of Do You Remember Love, that was originally supposed to be there.
Boo.
Yeah.
It doesn't look right.
It doesn't look right. It makes the movie too long.
I like it.
I like it in Flashback 2012. I just don't like it at the end of Do You Remember Love? Yeah,
it worked. It really works in 2012.
Yeah.
That there. Now that's another question. Why Flashback 2012? Like, were they done with Macross, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we gotta.
Kawamori wanted to work on video editing. And he wanted to figure out how to do video editing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he didn't want to do any more Macross.
No, he didn't.
Didn't
want
to do anything new.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they had this leftover idea of doing the concert thing.
Right, which I heard they'd already roughed out, storyboarded a fair chunk of it. So it was just a matter of taking what had already been thought up.
Yeah, well, the storyboards are all in there, in that book.
Right, but I mean, before he went back and...
And the anime did it.
Yeah. But, you know, I definitely agree with you in that I think the original movie ending, fading to black, is more of a downer, which I think is actually good. And that footage looks better.
It's
in
not
flashback.
A downer, it's still a happy ending.
It's still a bit of a downer. It's like, Minmay, you be one lonely ass singer.
She's got her music.
Yes. Sure. Minmay, you have your songs. That's like the worst line in the whole movie. Not the movie.
What was the TV series? What was
the final episode. Oh, yeah. Remember when the city is getting blown up and Minmay is like, no, Hikaru, stay with me, stay, Hikaru, don't go. Mm-hmm. And he's walking away and he's saying, no, Minmay, I have to go. I'm a soldier. I have to fight. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, just stay here with me, please. I'm gonna be lonely. And he's like, you'll never be lonely. You have your songs.
I tell you,
kick her when she's down, man.
I think Robotech did that better.
Was that one?
Well, he says when he's running away, he says, "Someday you'll understand." You know, you'll understand. Then.
Yeah, that's more gritty and military and real.
but then at the end, Lisa says, "Oh, you know, I'll take care of Rick while you're on your scene."
Oh God!
Like, they're gonna come back. All right. Okay. So anyway, how come they don't follow it up? I mean, obviously, Macross: Do You Remember Love is successful.
Yes.
How come they didn't just follow up with another series?
Oh, Kawamori didn't want to. Okay. Yeah, Big West wanted to.
But Kawamori didn't.
He didn't. Okay.
No, he went on a whirlwind tour of the world, basically. Yeah. Or at least he went to India.
Yeah, which China. I've seen him give a slideshow of his holiday snaps.
Yeah. No.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he just wanted to travel.
Yeah, and he experienced culture shock in a way. Because he went to all these kind of small towns and he saw... some people that didn't have a TV, and so it really kind of changed his perspective a lot. And you know, a lot of people say the original show is the best, and because after that, Kawamori went crazy.
He became a hippie.
Well, in a way, I can understand that.
Yeah.
He had a completely different attitude towards his creative work when he came back, and that's how you get Arjuna and. What Aquarian and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So eventually, Big West decides to pull the trigger and do a Macross sequel without
them. Yeah,
right.
It's like, fine, you're not coming. We don't care.
But Macross 2 had more original staff than most people think. I mean, it had Mickey Moto, which everybody knows. But it also had Sukihiro Tomita as the writer, who had written a lot of the original episodes of SDF Macross. He had written Do You Remember Love? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're going to get anyone back for a Macross sequel, Tomita's a pretty good guy to get.
How many episodes did he write of the original?
I don't think he wrote that many.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he wrote most of them, I think.
That many.
And he wrote the for My Fair Minmay.
He wrote that.
He wrote the
screenplay.
No, well, one of them. I mean, it's a different writer for everyone. But he wrote the Miss Macross contest one.
All right, and going to that, what brought Kawamori back? Finally.
I think the fact that Macross 2 was...
According to Itano.
Yeah.
Itano said... I don't know about Kawamori. Itano said that we did not want people to think that this was the Macross sequel.
Mm.
we're going to make our own sequel, and we get the original staff back together. And the first trailer said prominently, original staff back!
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, if those are the first words that you see,
yeah,
you know that you're basically putting down your previous product. You know? Forget about that. This is the real one. Right. Is basically.
And
what
which
I mean.
One are they referring to?
Plus.
But yeah.
And
Mickey
also, Plus was not originally intended to be a Macross series.
Yeah.
But the sponsors said, well, if you make Macross, if you make this series about, like, fighters in a competition, if you make this a Macross series,
you have to call it Macross,
then we'll sponsor it.
Yeah.
So that he was kind of forced into it, but also, so,
but
yeah.
But then his bargaining chip was that, okay, as long as you let me make Macross 7 as well.
Right.
So he said, if you let me do both of these things, we can do them at the same time, then you have your Macross sequel.
Right.
Because otherwise, no Macross sequel. And both or nothing.
With hindsight being 20/20, we all know which one made more money.
Yes.
7.
The one that Tom Bateman doesn't like.
Yeah.
It had a bigger impact on the fandom as well.
Mm.
Well, it was a TV show. It reached more people.
This is true. This is true.
All right. I think that pretty much wraps it up for this episode, Tom. I hope that busted a bunch of myths for you.
It did. It cleared up a lot.
So, if anyone has any more questions that maybe we can talk about on this corner, similar to the questions that Tom Bateman had, feel free to ask them, give us feedback, and the address is
speakerpod@gmail.com.
speakerpod@gmail.com.
Alright, and on that note, this is the cast of Macro Speaker Podcast, folding out.
I got a lot of feedback about the previous idea that I had for the Macross sequel.
Really?
Yes. And I've listened to it.
Define a lot.
Like two people.
Okay.
And okay, so the things that people didn't like about the previous one that I mentioned, nobody liked the de-emphasis of the Valkyries.
Oh.
No one liked junior high school girls.
Huh.
No one liked non-hostile aliens.
Well, that's a puzzler.
Yeah,
you're incredulous here, Renato.
So I've corrected
What's
all
wrong
these
with these
things.
People?
I've
okay.
corrected all these things.
Alright.
So here's my new brilliant idea for the Macross sequel. You've got not junior high school girls. Now we're going to elementary school girls. So a bunch of sixth graders who are science experts. They go to
the geniuses.
Yes, they check out some scientific experiment that's going on, where a scientist is trying to put human intelligence into a Valkyrie. And they end up getting mixed up in this project. They accidentally crash it, and it all goes wrong, so that now you've got about 5 or 6 elementary school girls who can turn into Valkyries. The leader looks like a YF-29 when she turns into a Valkyrie. You know, then there's, like, the one girl who turns into a Destroid, but she's kind of fat when she's a human. And so when they turn into their, like, Valkyrie bits and, like, fly off to save the world, she's, like, there as a Destroid defender, like, running after them, going, like, hey, wait for me, guys, wait for me! And so the idea is that this is a 26-episode TV series.
Only 26?
26. No, 26. I've got a...
Is this a comedy?
No. Okay. So they turn into Valkyries. Basically, all they do is every episode there's a crisis aboard the ship. And they help out. So, for example, for one episode, maybe street corner, the traffic lights go out. So they have to turn into Valkyries and direct traffic.
Oh, can we have a kitten stuck in a tree?
Yes.
Yay!
Okay, episode 14.
have to transform into planes and go on top of the tree.
Yes, or perhaps maybe there's a typhoon on board the ship, and there's an aquarium, and so all of the fish, because of the typhoon, all of the fish get blown out into the ocean, and so they have to turn to Valkyries and bring all the fish back to the ship. The good thing about this show, the really good thing, is that because it's elementary school girls turning into Valkyries, kind of like Michael Bay's Transformers, they will have faces. Valks with faces. Elementary school girl faces. We have not seen Valks with faces for 24 years, and everyone is missing them. Valks with faces again.
Because it's funny.
Because it's funny.
I thought you said it wasn't a comedy.
This part's funny. It's got some comedic elements to it. It's a serious story, but it's got some comedic elements. And there's one girl who is a songwriter. And so at the end of every episode, she writes a song about whatever adventure they had that episode. You build up, like, a whole bunch of songs. The love triangle? Well, the mad scientist is married, but the main girl who turns into the YF-29 falls in love with him. But he's married. Love triangle. Then finally, in episode 26, a bunch of Zentradi attack, and the one girl who sings songs decides to make a medley of the 25 songs that she has written before and broadcast them to the Zentradi, and they get scared and run away. The end.
I'd watch that.
I'm not implicating myself any further.
Alright.
When do the Blu-rays come out?
It's a great idea. Shut up.